Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to episode number 340 of the Peristyle Podcast. Whoa, big show for you this week on the podcast. USC losing on a Hail Mary pass. Arizona State, unbelievable. If we're on the field for that game, could not believe that USC lost. And you can't believe it either because we have so many questions to get to this week. Dan Weber, Coach Harvey Hyde are going to try to answer every single one of them that you've sent in. How do you do that? Send them in to podcast at uscfootball.com. Or call us at 206-888-6755. Or go to our website, peristylepodcast.com, and leave a voicemail right there. Just want to jump right in because we have so much to get to. We don't want to go too long with this, but, man, there's a lot of questions, a lot of concerns out there. Coach Harvey Hyde, as you can understand, it was a crazy night at the Coliseum.
It was a crazy night at the Coliseum. If you want to say, just call it that, I'd say it is. It's one of those type of situations when you go back and you say, why, if, when, should have, would have, all of that. You throw everyone in there, and Ryan, you couldn't be wrong. So rather than me just go along and try to recap the entire game, which I can't do in an hour or two, what we'll do is why don't we just start off by you asking me questions that the people have sent in, or if you have questions we can listen to, and we'll try to get to everybody's questions. I don't know if we can do it, but we'll try.
We're going
to
try our damnedest, Coach. And I want to thank our sponsor before we jump in, Southern California Tickets, sctickets.com. If you need tickets for Dodgers, Angels, any kind of stuff going on here in Southern California, across the country, go to sctickets.com or call them at 1-800-888-7287, and they will hook you up. And you can follow Coach Harvey Hyde on Twitter, at Coach Harvey Hyde. You can follow me, at Inside Troy. Tweet either one of us. We both like to get on the Twitter and have some discussions, a lot of discussions, Saturday night, of course, as you know. I want to jump into some of these questions. Coach, we do apologize. We'll try to get to each and every one. We'll keep our answers a little tighter this week just because we know there's so much going on. So many people have sent in things, and I'm going to start with a voicemail question, Coach, for you. Here you go.
Hi, Ryan. Had to ask a question. This is Al from Fresno. Being that the team is underperforming, does the coach think that they're just being undercoached? Because if you look at the opposite other side of the ball, these other teams are throwing downfield. They're, you know, making positive yardage with first downs and trying to move the ball. We're throwing balls behind the line of scrimmage, in the flat, running up the middle, very predictable. The Coliseum isn't full. Crowd isn't happy. What does the coach think we have to do to change this and turn this thing around? Thanks.
Well, that's not an easy answer, and it's not a short answer.
Uh-oh.
but I'll tell you, first thing, you have to be on the same page, I think. You have to understand what you're trying to accomplish. The kids have to understand what you're trying to accomplish. I think you got to put all the towels away, put everybody down on the field, put helmets on them, get everybody away from your players talking on the sideline, and get focused on what you're doing in the football game. Hey, this is a battle. You're in a foxhole. You need to keep everybody undercover or ready to play. I don't know where this thing came in the background with everybody standing on the benches and dancing and twirling towels and everything. But to me, that takes away from the main focus of what you're trying to do. But that's my opinion. If they want to be a cheerleader, if they don't want to play in the game, let everybody sit up in the stands. But I think that they practice that. Someone hand out the towels. So I'm looking at this as I'm saying, you're actually wasting time trying to figure out how to get more spirit on the bench rather than execution and what's necessary to win a football game. I think you got to use your time properly in what you're doing. The final play of the game, the Hail Mary play, for example, and I'll just pick that one out. Not that that's the only play. I think the play before with 73 yards with a couple of minutes to go in the game was just as big. in the coverages and how that play came off after Allen ran for his touchdown. They weren't even in a final play of the game defense. I mean, if they were, you would think, first of all, people would go for the ball, that you'd have your bigger guys back there, like with hands, some of your receivers. How about your tight ends, Bryce Dixon and Telford, guys that are 6'3", 6'4", 6'5". They can jump up in the air and knock the ball down or catch the ball or do whatever you teach them to do, get in positions so that that type of pass can't be even caught. They weren't in the proper defense. They had a defense called a cover two, which is a zone, two deep, zone deep. And then at the last minute, they made the change to, I believe, the prevent defense. And at that time, not the prevent, but the final play of the game defense. And at that time, it wasn't communicated. So half the team did it and half the team didn't do it. You have Hayes Pollard standing in the end zone and wondering what he's doing there. I mean, nothing against Hayes Pollard. Now, I'm not going to pick on players. I'm just saying, when you're in a situation and you have 3 minutes left in the game or 2 minutes left in the game and you're up by 9 points, you don't lose a football game. When they had their first onside kick, I said that was the biggest play of the game when Telford caught that. And I said, wow, and he took a good hit too. And then you drove the ball, you were driving the ball, you were running the clock, and Buck Allen broke for a touchdown. I said, fall down, Buck. Don't get in the end zone. You scored too fast.
Yeah.
All you needed to do was run the clock out. They had no timeouts. Rather than get a 37-yard touchdown, I'd rather have seen four first downs. Because every time you took time off the clock, it wouldn't have come down to 23 seconds, even how fast they threw the next play. The next play that after you kick off to them, they throw a touchdown pass down the sideline to Smith. And the change is almost impossible to explain the emotion of that for myself. How you can go from being up by nine to back down now to two. And then another onside kick. And fortunately, you get the next onside kick. Fortunately. And right then now you say it's over because you got the onside kick. It's over. All you need to do, but don't give the ball back because there's no way in heck the defense can stop them. No, I tweeted out in the third quarter that the best defense in this game the rest of the way is the offense to have the football.
Yeah,
was they were not stopping them in any way. I don't know if you noticed that tweet or not.
I did,
Ryan.
Coach. Yeah,
that's exactly what I said. Because you cannot stop that offense. They could not. They had no capabilities whatsoever. They didn't know what they were doing or whatever.
Yeah, no, it's hard to argue with any of that logic, Coach.
Right. So here we go. So how do you win the football game? Well, you don't try to not win the game. You try to win. You don't try to lose the game. They're not trying to lose the game, but you want to win the game. So all you need to do when you look at the clock, you know they have no timeouts. You figure out how many plays you have to run, and if you make one first down, it's over. Over. Done. But they don't try to do that. They just like run around and put their knee down, run around and put their knee down. But if you're going to do that, run from sideline to sideline so that at least you're using time up. So they punt the ball, and I had no idea at that time that the center had a concussion. So Cody's punting the ball like a regular snap. And I don't know how many times he practices that, but normally on a Division I level, you have a backup center. They have a backup center. It's on scholarship. Why don't you use them? What if you need to kick a winning field goal? You're not going to kick it because you don't have a center? You've got to be able to have backups, and they have backups. But they didn't. They decided not to, whatever they're trying to save him, not burn a redshirt year, whatever. But you got to win a football game. That's more important than anything else. So I just think there's a lot of things like this, and I'm going to quit because we could go on and on and on. I don't think it's fair to our other callers or people that wanted to answer questions, but I just took that portion of it to explain it now as far as your question.
Yeah, you've hit on some other questions we have. And the first one with the, you talk about the cheering. It's about basically a lot of the walk-ons are on the sideline if you haven't seen it. And I guess they showed it on television. John wrote in And I wanted to get your quick thoughts on this. We don't want to go too long because it comes up a lot. But it says, as an alum, I feel embarrassed as we're having the backups jump up and down on the sideline. The head coach and his staff are responsible for this, and there doesn't seem to be any passion for the game. It's a good question for you. How many people does Sark have on his staff? As there seem to be a lot of people on the sidelines doing BS, like giving attitude to receiver Darius Rogers when he dropped the ball, rather than coach him up. By the way, I'm seeing all of this on national television. So we've got a lot of stuff like this, Coach, where people are concerned, like, why are these walk-ons on the sideline cheering like that? It seems like it's kind of fake enthusiasm.
It is. If you have to fire a team up to get into the game by having your players in the back jumping up and down, and it is embarrassing, and twirling towels and throwing the towels up in the air when it's a penalty and so on, that's not football. Whether they're walk-on or not, they're part of that football team. Whether you're on scholarship or not, you're part of that football team. You help prepare for battle, play this football game. And to have all those people on the sideline like this gentleman just mentioned, I see it all the time. I wonder, who are these people? I mean, who are these people that are hugging these kids and talking to them and distracting them from the game and not knowing what play's called? I mean, I don't know. And I call that bench discipline, okay? It's got to start everywhere. Locker room discipline, bus riding discipline, plane riding discipline, huddle discipline, practice discipline, sideline, the whole pack, the whole thing. And right now it looks like it's chaos on the sideline. I have no idea. I would be surprised to have somebody run up and call a play, send it in the game.
We'll see. But, yeah, that was a concern. It seems kind of strange, but I'm curious to see if they continue to do that going forward. Matthew is a depressed Trojan fan in Michigan. He gave us two reasons for the loss. I'm going to summarize it because it was kind of long. Penalties that kept those couple Arizona State drives alive, and very conservative play calling when the game was on the line. When Sark was under pressure, he felt the play calling got a lot more conservative. And he says, I hope Sark learns from this. It really seems like they're holding back on offense. I love Buck Allen, Justin Davis, but I feel they could wing it through the air and could really exploit teams with their tight ends. This will be a loss that stings at the end of the year because SC should have won by 3 touchdowns. Hope they make adjustments. They're too talented not to turn this thing around. That's Matthew in Michigan.
And Matthew in Michigan, I agree with you. I don't believe I would switch the roster of USC with any other roster in the Pac-12. You've got great receivers, great running backs. You've got to coach these kids up. The penalties you're talking about, too, specifically, I'm thinking of is when Woods got one for sacking the quarterback when it was a big down and they had an incomplete pass and they got a first down and then a pass interference, I think, with number 4, Hawkins, had a holding penalty in the secondary after an incomplete pass where they got a first down. You can't have this. You can't beat yourself. And this is helping your opponent. You can't do things like that. And I agree with the tight ends. Here you have 2 great receiving tight ends, and they're hardly ever used. I mean, you got to stretch the field. I mean, Strong, that great big receiver that Arizona has, do you see the mismatches that they do to the defensive backs? Where Bryce Dixon and Telford's the same type of player. Put him in the slot where they can't cover him. Run post corners. Run curls. What happened to the old curl route? Comeback routes. These type of routes, drag routes. I agree 100% with our caller. I think you've got to utilize your talent that you have to the best of their ability. Play to win. Make the big play.
All right. Let's move on. Jay Villalta, I believe his name is, USC class of 97. He says, any hard-fought loss is a loss one can live with. I think he's saying this is not a hard-fought. A question for Coach is, what does this team get out of yet another loss of poor defensive performances? Is there a fundamental structural change that must happen? I can see this happening again unless there's a fundamental change with this team.
Well, you're going to see this next weekend. You're going to see, well, you saw this team lose 2 different ways as far as on the defensive side of the ball. And you can't blame defense. You got to blame everybody, coaching staffs, everybody. Yeah, and you don't necessarily blame them. You just say someone's in charge here. And you always look to say who won the battle and who you decorate when they win and who you bust as far as their ranks when they lose. I think that you went against an option type of team with Boston College and a power team, and there was not. We all saw there wasn't any adjustments made on Murphy there, when he carried the ball. Murray, the quarterback from Boston College. Everyone knows USC should have beaten Boston College. I said this morning, Ryan, when you were listening, I can see us losing or SC losing to Stanford, but I can't see SC losing the game they lost last night and the Boston College. They'd be 4-1. I think everybody say, hey, you know what? They played Stanford really well and lost, but to lose the way these two games went down is where everybody starts questioning what's going on. What's going on? Are they playing hard? I think they're playing hard. Are they playing with as much meanness as they had? I sort of question that. I don't know if there's a guy on the football field there coaching now that turns his hat around backwards and wants to headbutt the wall. The toughness of a football team you need on the big play. And then you lost this week on defensive adjustments, and people aren't making the big play and not getting lined up right. I mean, man, oh, man. And then also, I don't want to say it's just coaching. I mean, drop passes, four drop passes, a touchdown pass drop. But they drop touchdown passes too, so you can't just put it one way. But there's a combination of everything. I'm not real, you know, the play. Why did you run a wildcat when it's 2nd and 10? I mean, who are you trying to fool? Or what was it, 3rd and 2, and you throw a bubble screen and -2. I mean, these are things that I sit here and I say, just tell me why. I mean, you don't need to. In the series that you need, as far as this comes off of that and that comes off of this, and just keep the rhythm going. And if you can't get to the quarterback, then go after the quarterback. You've got to pressure this guy. This guy was in a rhythm where he was going 7. He was playing 7-on-7.
Yeah.
He was actually passing against air, like there was no defenders there. I mean, you got to do something to change that. You can't just let it continue because the clock and the scoreboard keeps changing, so you got to make different adjustments. Yes, it sounds easy to talk about it now after the fact, but you got to be prepared during your game planning and practicing to do this. They lost on the last play of the game on something that they practice every day on in practice, as the players say, but they didn't have a chance to use it. Now, how does that make sense? Doesn't make sense.
No, it does not. Well, Coach, we know you're not an advocate of talking about firing coaches and all the families that are involved. We talked about this before, but we got a lot of questions, so I want to read you a couple of these and kind of get your thoughts on this. But like, there's a couple guys, like Bill wrote in. He said, you need to fire the athletic director and football coach. Players just stood and watched the other team catch a winning pass, so he's not happy. But for there's some people talk about Sark, but a lot of it's focused on Justin Wilcox, and people want to bring back Clancy Pendergast, who USC's still paying, by the way. He was the defensive coordinator last year and was just stuck around for 1 year before they let him go. But I'll read you this one question, and there's a whole bunch of other people that kind of wrote in something similar. He said, if you didn't notice, this was one of the worst coach games in USC football history. How can our 4- and 5-star guys continue to be beaten by their 2- and 3-star guys? Coaching, coaching, coaching. Our offensive play calling is terrible. We try short 5-yard passes, mainly the sideline, when the game was at the end. All we needed was a couple of first downs and the game was over. Instead, Sark called nothing but runs, which we haven't been able to do all game, and gave the ball back to Arizona. The handwriting was on the wall. They would get the ball back, and we would lose. Sark needs to be fired, or someone else needs to direct the offense. Our pass defense is ridiculous. How come the other team's wide receivers are open all the time, and ours are barely open? Wilcox needs to be fired. Bring back Clancy Pendergast. What a disaster. There's always next year. That's Gene from Orange County. And we had Martin in Ontario, Ron, Jay, John, Marcel and Diamond Bar. All those guys we're talking about firing Wilcox and bringing Pendergast back. So it's been a topic of conversation, Coach. What are your thoughts on USC's defensive coordinator and how that all shakes out?
Well, you know, you can make all the statements, and you certainly can. That's your priority. You can make these statements, but it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen because Wilcox is part of Coach Sarkisian's staff. And Pat Hayden isn't going to force that issue. And they're in their first year. I hear people the other side, oh, give them time, this is the first game. But my main thing is, their first season is, if the team's getting better and progressing, I can buy that. I can say, oh, man, that was a great game, hard fought. They're getting better every week. They added this, that's working good, and so on. But that really hadn't been the case. They're not going to change it. They're not going to bring Clancy back. That's history. Coach Wilcox, he's just got to get it done. I mean, you're paying a guy, you paid $1 million to buy him out of his contract at Washington. So, obviously, Coach Sarkisian is the person who's responsible for putting the staff together. So, it's not Justin Wilcox, it's the general, the guy that runs the corporation. But people around me, and I've used this before, and I'm going to use this again, so if you're a regular listener, I'm sorry. But USC is the White House. It's General Motors. It's Ford. It's a corporation. It's one of the biggest deals around. So when you have a university like that, you have key people that are a part of it. And one of it is what puts the school together, not only the academic side, but the football program. So your leader of the football program surrounds himself with people like the president does with cabinet people. And you've got to have the best. One of those people is the person that flies Air Force One. He doesn't learn on the job. He's been in the Navy and flown, or Air Force and flown. He's done it all. You bring in that guy to be your pilot, to put together the flight plan, to make sure that you're going to get where you're going safely. You don't bring somebody in that hasn't been that quality experienced person. So you don't bring a guy in that hadn't flown that type of plane. You don't bring a guy in that's a Piper Cub guy. And I'm not saying Justin Wilcox is, but I'm not sure on his credentials to be flying Air Force One. Same with the offensive coordinator. Now, Coach Sarkisian chooses to call his plays. That's his priority. He can do that. But myself, being a head football coach, I knew I didn't have the time at a major college university with all the required things to speak at, the press and everything else, to do what I needed to do to be an offensive coordinator. So you want that same pilot, that type of pilot, doing the offense and special teams. Then you game manage the game. And you remind all of these guys what's coming up and what to have ready, and what you expect and what you want to do in this down-distance situation. So I think Coach Sarkisian, when you look ahead as far as what do we do today when we're sitting in a staff meeting, I would relinquish the play calling and give it back to Clay Helton. I would say that, hey, Clay, take it. We had great success when you did it with Orgeron and in the Las Vegas Bowl. Take it. Let me manage the football program on and off the field. And if I need to work with the defensive side of the football as much as I do the offensive football, fine. Let me be in charge of the bench discipline. Let me be in charge of all the things that are necessary to keep this White House, General Motors, Ford making a profit. But this is just my suggestion, but there will not be any changes made in the staff during this year. That is what I would, as a head football coach, if you came to me and said you got to fire your defensive coordinator, I'd say, I'm not firing him. If you fire, you fire him. I'm not going to fire him. So that's the way I would look at it, because I'm the one that made the decision to bring him in. So I'm the one that wants to give them the opportunity to fly my plane.
Yeah.
Okay, Ron?
And I agree with you, Coach. Like, I mean, I don't think it's going to happen. I think it'd be justified if he did. They had a good option that they're still paying, bring back Pendergast. I don't have an issue with that. But also, relinquishing the play calling, I think, is a big step. That's something they can do. It's something that would work. Let him handle the bench. There's too much confusion at the end of the game. So I have no issues with doing something like that. And what that, you know, I'm sure that question is going to come up again this week. You also talked about the Hail Mary, and I want to touch on that. Charles from Carson had a question about that, too. He said he remembers the Coliseum as a kid watching Keyshawn Johnson play, and when there was a Hail Mary, they put Keyshawn Johnson and some other wide receivers as jumpers. He says, I saw five or six Trojans there, and no one jumped. That's bad coaching. I think our coaches are out overthinking at times, which gives me a sense that they have self-doubt. And I wanted to get, you know, we talked about it a little bit. I want to get your quick thoughts. But just to let people know, when they do practice this in practice, that it's a situation where it'll be the offense jumps one play and the defense jumps another. And it almost looked like, Coach, that they said, okay, only the offense can jump. It's like the defensive players went down there just like they practiced, but they didn't jump at the end and do that. And I think the reason, if they were going to put any tall people in there, they were confused on the play call as well. They weren't sure what was going to happen. So it's not like they had it set up for a Hail Mary defense. So I think if they knew what it was going to be, they might have set that up. And you could argue they should have known. And that's like that's the only thing that could happen. But you didn't really see what their Hail Mary defense was because they were kind of confused. And half the guys were in one defense, half the guys were another. But to me, Coach, it looked like what they practiced. It's only when he calls a play, he says, offense jumps this time. That's what it looked like happened. Only the offense jumped.
Well, that's what it appeared, too. I agree. I think that's what most of the people are complaining about, too, is the effort on the play. It was like they were all in shock. He just ran through there like it was a tall play, went up in the air, ran to the ball, as he explained it, looked over his shoulder, ran to the ball, made a catch. There was, if nothing else, made pass interference. Knock him down if he's open that early, and don't let him catch the ball. It's a 15-yard penalty. I mean, you do some type of effort to try to stop that play, and they were so confused they didn't know what was going on.
Yeah,
they were in shock too. The guys on the field, because they were confused, they didn't know what to do, what to line up in. They were afraid they'd get in trouble because they're not running the defense that was called. And that's basically what happened, because you didn't have your, as this gentleman mentioned, your tall receiver type guys like I talked about earlier on the field. And that's what happened. And you lost the game. You know, myself, if I'd have thought they were doing it when they came out and I saw them line up in the trips to run it or whatever they were going to do, I couldn't see the formation. I don't know what the formation was. But I'd have had my defensive tackle jump off sides. Give them 5 yards,
yeah,
so I can get the right defense in there, or whatever I'm going to do. But you know, it's easy for me to think about that now. But those are the things you think about as far as preparing if it isn't what you think it's going to be.
You know, Dennis wrote in too, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this. He said, "Did you guys hear Sark in his post game interview say that's why you play 60 minutes?" He said, "How about you and Wilcox coach for 60 minutes?" Which understandable. He would say something like that. But he felt that they were playing a prevent defense. He goes, all that does is prevent you from winning. It looked like you wanted them. They didn't really play a prevent defense when they gave up the 73-yard pass to Cameron Smith. I mean, there was only one defender there. There was no one behind him to, you know, prevent a score. They didn't keep him in front of him. And then they weren't really in the right defense for a Hail Mary either. But Dennis had a question about prevent defense, but it seems like they should have probably been in something similar to that, and they weren't.
It is. It's absolutely amazing to play before you talk about when Smith caught a football. I don't know what positioning the defensive back had. I know who it is. I'm just not going to mention his name. I mean, the angle, it's almost like he was falling down. They went after him a lot during that game. Yeah, I mean, the position of where he was on the field, it wasn't like he was going for an interception. That's what it appeared. But he was just off balance and fell down, and there was no safety help, nobody behind. I don't know what was going on. It was like the lonesome end that nobody knew was out there. And they threw him all, and he hit it perfectly, and that's what happened. They scored a touchdown. It was a shock to everybody. Because now it's back to the two-point play and another onside kick.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have two or three times to win the football game. And that's what people are talking about. People left. And I talked to some people that changed the channel on TV, but, oh, they're up by 9. 2 minutes ago, I'm going to watch the UCLA game. And all of a sudden, they come back to see what happened. They lost.
Yeah.
You say, how could this happen? Well, that's basically what happened. And You didn't play to win. You didn't finish the game. As that gentleman mentioned, you got to coach for 60 minutes as well as you got to play for 60 minutes. It just broke down completely. It started to break down. I saw it starting to break down when I tweeted out at the end of the third quarter, hey, just hold on to the football. Get ahead and hold on to the football. Don't score too early. Get out of here. And they did have 38 minutes with a possession, time of possession, USC.
Yeah.
But they didn't have enough. They needed to get two first downs. Two more first downs, and there isn't 23 seconds.
Yeah.
And it almost reminds me of the Texas game for the national championship. When on 2nd and 7, they threw the ball to Hancock in the flat. It was incomplete, stopping the clock. And then they came back, ran the ball. Adele White ran for 5 and then took Reggie out of the game and then ran for the 1 yard or whatever they had to make for a first down. They were short.
Yeah.
They wasted it down and stopped the clock. And that's what beat them.
He's trying to rip people's heart out with bringing up the Texas loss after this one, Coach. You know.
Well, doesn't it sort of remind you of that?
No, it definitely does. But you know, we're talking about that Seymour play, and as a coach, to me, you didn't mention his name. It was Kevon Seymour that went for the interception or tried to tip the pass. I don't mind that as much, and maybe I'm completely wrong. But he's trying to make a play on the football now. Should he try to keep him? The receiver in front of him, yes. But I would blame more of the defensive scheme. If he does try to make a play on the football and misses, there should be something behind him to help. I mean, in that situation, you're just trying to prevent a long play. I mean, I don't mind him trying to be aggressive and making a play. Maybe I'm completely wrong. But shouldn't there be somebody behind him as a safety valve to keep him in front of him?
No question. But it didn't look like they were playing man. I don't know what they were playing. It didn't really show it. But I didn't watch the game there at the stadium. I always go home and chart it, as you know, completely.
Yeah.
And they didn't show basically what the coverage was. They just showed the effort. And, you know, in that type of a situation, you do one or two things. You come up and bump them on the line of scrimmage and then play 2-deep zone so the guy can't get off the line of scrimmage. You disrupt his route. And then you got a safety in the back, too. You run with him if they don't put a guy in the flat. So you run with him and you double-team the guy. But there was no correct positioning anywhere. And if you're playing zone behind, but if you're playing man and he's faster than you, you don't want to play man. You want to keep him in front of you, like you said.
Yeah.
Because if you fall down or slip, they could get a touchdown. So I just don't know. I just don't know what was happening in the secondary. But basically, I don't want to just talk about these two plays. It looked like to me, whenever they threw the ball, I'd say, oh, my gosh, they either caught it or dropped the pass.
Yeah.
Really, that's what was going on there in the third and fourth quarter. They either caught the ball or they dropped the pass. They dropped a lot of passes, or it had been a lot different.
We got a few more I want to try to get to quickly. Jesse Rodriguez, U.S. Army retired. He had 3 questions. I'll kind of read them all to you, Coach, and kind of pick what you want to talk about. But he said, is it me? Is it seeing this team, with the exception of the Fresno State game, is never prepared and cannot adjust during halftime or during games? 2, he said, I understand that we're dealing with depth issues and our defense gets tired in the second half. What I'm not understanding is why does it seem like the team loses its focus and continues to have lapses on offense and defense? And then 3, why does this defense resemble Monty Kiffin's Tampa 2 a lot at times during the game? Seems like last year's defense was more aggressive and attacking. We get no pass rush whatsoever for stretchers during the games. That's Jesse Rodriguez. Thank you for your service, Jesse. U.S. Army retired.
Well, I have to agree with him on almost all issues here. First of all, you're not getting any pass rush whatsoever. And in that final play of the game there, I mentioned it earlier, those guys were exhausted. They weren't making any type of rush anyway. I'd have taken them out, and I'd have put a bunch of linebackers in there, Quentin Powell and the rest of these guys, and I'd have had them rush the passer. I mean, even have them stand up. At least you have team speed out there on the field. I mean, you could leave Leonard Williams in there but you got to get after that guy. Rush for him, make him hurry his pass. He just stood back there and he took all day to throw the ball. And what was the second part now? Give me the first part.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
That was one.
Okay,
that was
so
the third part.
So he's talking about that they can't make adjustments during the game or halftime. It just seems like they're never prepared and they're unorganized.
Well, what you're seeing. As you're seeing on the offensive side of the ball, if they do this, I do that. what SC seems to do is that. They're not counteracting something they're stopping by saying, oh, you're going to stop that? Then we're going to run bootleg. Oh, you're going to stop that? Then I'm going to hit my tight ends on a curl. Oh, you're going to run cover two? I'm going to hit you down the seam, and I'm going to run a post. Oh, you're going to run cover two? Or we're going to run a post corner, and I'm going to have the tight end in the flat and run a post corner with my slot. I mean, there's ways of, if you do this, I'm going to do that. And you've got to be able to be ready to do that, not continually do the same thing that sometimes works and sometimes doesn't work. You've got to have a variation of series of offensive plays that covers all of the different things that a defense can do to you. And they don't seem to be doing that. So that's what the offensive side of the ball, as far as me trying to explain that to you. On the defensive side of the football, I agree. If you're not getting to the quarterback and he's whipping you, then you better go after him. You better go after him 100%. Now, what they were worried about is DJ Foster, the running back, is a great receiver. Well, then put another DB in the game or do something differently to cover him rather than a linebacker. But you had to get to the quarterback because he was having a field day. You got to flush him out. He can't run that well. He was gaining confidence as the game went along. It was like unbelievable time that he had to throw the football. When he got sacked, I think twice. I think Felix got him once, and Craven got him once. Otherwise, he had a pass free day, and what did he do? Throw the ball 46 times. So, you know, it wasn't a good day. It just wasn't a good day. Everyone should be responsible for that loss, and I think they feel that way. At least I hope they feel that way, because I know how I felt after the game, and it wasn't a good feeling. This is going to be one that's going to take a while to get rid of as fans and also as players. And I'll tell you, you're going to see a hurry-up offense. You talk about a hurry-up offense. You know, SC talks about their hurry-up offense. You're going to see a team to beat Oregon and what they do, the hurry-up offense. And if you don't adjust to these guys have receivers now. They say, a lot of people say, this is the best group of receivers. I think SC's got the best group, but they say Arizona's receivers are the best group of receivers in the Pac-12. And they've got a quarterback, Solomon, who's a freshman, who's a redshirt freshman out of Bishop Gorman High School in Las Vegas, who as a starter for 4 years in Las Vegas was 57-3. So he knows how to win. And he doesn't stand in the pocket. This kid can run, too. So, you know, you're going to have to do some adjusting there, too, and get ready for Arizona, because Arizona now, right now, is currently leading the South and could win the South Championship in the Pac-12.
Hey, Coach, we got a few more. You want to do? We can knock these out super fast.
I'll do a couple more. Certainly appreciate people checking.
Yeah, we'll do them quick. You don't have to, you know, kind of do long answers. We'll do – Will in Washington talked about Coney Kessler. He likes the way he manages the game and limits turnovers. But with the athletes on offense and the outside, do we need to switch someone like Max Brown? So, I don't know. Cody Kessler, to me, has been playing well. But any thoughts of switching?
No, you know, I really like Cody Kessler. I think he's a winner. I think he's in charge. I think he's the only guy really in charge in the offense out there. He's actually trying to perform. He's trying to keep the offense together. When he ran that touch for a touchdown on that broken play, he ran up the middle and scored. I said, come on, get in there, and he did. He needed to make that play because they were struggling, and he made that play.
Yeah.
And Cody, makes good decisions. He just needs some help. He needs some help in the play calling. He needs some help with guys catching the ball. He needs a little bit of help. Otherwise, it's not his fault. It really isn't. He's a winner. He's a good guy. Right now, he's probably, I mean, statistically, and I know I hate statistics, okay? I just like wins. But statistically, he's having a good year.
Yeah.
A good enough year for the team to be at least 4-1. Because I said earlier I could stomach them losing to Stanford, which I don't like to lose to anybody. But I cannot tolerate losing to somebody who you should win and beat. Arizona State lost 9 starters on defense last year. 9. And you can't beat them. So, you know, that's what everybody's upset about, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Now, among other things.
All right, so that's Kessler. I agree with you there. Andrew wants to know about, he says, Justin Wilcox is doing a real disservice to the team by having Sua Cravens playing linebacker. He may be one of the best DBs in college football, and you had him in there in the flat for the Hail Mary. I know Sark is his friend, but I hate to see him ruin a player's pro stock, i.e. Shaq Thompson. Do you think Cravens should be linebacker or safety?
Well, you know,
could use them at both
right
spots.
Right now, when you ask me that question, I say, you know, you don't have the speed at linebacker that you need. So they're putting mismatches on you, okay? What they want you to do is have some of these slower guys try to cover their backs in the flat and throw routes on you when you're playing man in these different coverages. So what he's trying to do is at least get a guy that can cover. I think Craven's done a good job in doing that. He's very intent. I mean, last week he scored that interception. Another guy playing linebacker wouldn't have made that play. He made a couple of plays early in the game that he got a sack and it caused a couple of losses as far as running game, and they got away from the running game, and that's the worst thing that happened. But it's a difficult question to answer. He's a great athlete. Where do you play him? He could be a great strong safety. He could be a great, you know, linebacker is something outside. But you know, you're not getting pressure. You're not getting what you need out of your outside linebackers. And really, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think you've got the action out of your inside linebackers that you need, and out of your defensive front. There's one guy playing his butt off. The others, I don't see in the game much. I mean, they're not penetrating. Whose side of the ball are they playing on? They're playing on FC's side of the ball. I mean, you got to penetrate. You got to cause disruption when you're a defensive lineman. You got to be able to, you know, cause people to say, we can't run there, we can't run there. Stop it before it gets going. I used to say, let's stop a play before it gets started. And right now, SC's not doing that. They're letting them get started, and then they're trying to defend them.
Yeah, I got no problem with him playing up near the line of scrimmage. You just need two of them, that's all. He's great wherever he plays. I don't think him not being deep on the Hail Mary was his fault. They just didn't know what they were running. Yeah, but yeah, hard to argue. He's so good either way. Like, you want him in there. He makes plays in the backfield from that spot. So it's not like they moved him and he's not making plays. He's still making plays. And then Coach. Earl West, L.A., we haven't had anyone else talk about this. USC passed up 2 field goal opportunities that he felt that if it would have been made, would have given a 2-point margin of victory instead of a 4-point defeat. Thoughts on that, skipping a couple field goals?
No, you're exactly right. I spoke about that this morning. I don't know why you pass up points. You had some points there. I think it was 4th and 2 or 4th and 1, and they went for it. You passed on the field goal. Hadari was on. You can tell whether he's on or off, and he was on yesterday. And I'd have given him that opportunity to kick those 2 field goals. I agree 100%. Don't pass on points. And they passed on those points, and it came back to haunt them. What can you say? You know, it's easy to say it today. I mean, if you remember a week ago, he went on 4th down on a play, and I said, oh, no. And they were only up, I forget by how many points, against Oregon State. And luckily, he made it. Luckily. Otherwise, man, they could have lost the Oregon State game. I really believe that. So you got to keep control of yourself, and you can't let your emotions take over what you're going to do by getting mad or any of that. You got to say, hey, it makes sense right now. Let's take the 3 points. And he didn't do that. And that's a very good point. I'm glad he brought it up.
All right. Well, we got a whole bunch, Coach. Great job. I know we went a little long, but thank you so much for hanging in there, and everyone else in the podcast land, thanks for hanging in. And we're only halfway done. We still got to get to Dan Weber, and he's got a whole bunch more questions to answer. So we're trying to get to all of them. We want people to be able to vent. Like you say on your show, on the Trojan Brunch, Coach, it's like therapy. So thanks for letting people vent with you, and thanks for answering everyone's questions.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate all you people out there that give us a show by calling in or asking the questions. And all we try to do, remember, it's our opinion. There's no one way of doing anything. It's just our opinion. And if you're a parent of a player that's out there, you know, we know how you feel. And if it didn't hurt, then it didn't mean anything to you. So I always used to say that. Don't be afraid to cry. Don't be afraid to be upset. It should hurt when you're supposed to work so hard to get something and you don't get it.
All right. Well, Coach, great stuff. You can follow him at Coach Harvey Hyde on Twitter. We'll be back in a minute talking with USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast.
Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287, 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater.
We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
We are back on the Peristyle Podcast. We have USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber is going to join the show right now and share his thoughts. We still we got a whole bunch of questions, Dan, answered with Coach Harvey Hyde, and we still have a whole bunch, and I'm still getting more in my email box, so I apologize to everyone if we don't get to your question. We should touch on all the topics. We've got a long podcast this week, and Dan, really nice for you to join us and share your thoughts.
I'm glad to be here, and yep, that's all we can do is talk ourselves through this. this is twice in 5 weeks, so that's a little tough.
Yeah, two really bad losses of the first five games of Steve Sarkisian's career. Not ideal. But let's jump into some of these questions, and we'll get to talk about all the different subjects. I'm sure we're going to touch on some of the same stuff we did with Coach Hyde, but there's just a lot of people that want to vent, and we're here for you, and we're going to try to share what we think, what happened, and give you our opinions. And here we go with our first voicemail question for you, Dan.
Hey, guys, Chris from San Pedro. You know, given the youth on the team, the lack of depth, and all the juniors we lost to the NFL, I didn't have high expectations for this year, but one thing I didn't expect was kind of a fundamentally unsound team. I just don't see the penalties as being even on either side being a matter. We just shouldn't have as many penalties as we are, especially in the secondary. I'm questioning the play calling on not kicking a field goal in the first half and then throwing that bubble screen at the end of the second half, which took us out of field goal range. Both those things potentially could have given us the game. And I don't understand what those plays are supposed to accomplish. We're playing offense like we're scoring 60 points a game and we're barely scoring 20. The other thing I'd like to ask your opinion about is Justin Wilcox. I don't know, you know, why people think he's great, and maybe he is, but they just don't seem on defense to be making sound plays. They're out of position. They're going for interceptions when they should be just knocking the ball down. And all the pass interference calls just don't seem right to me. So anyway, just like your comments, and wondering if you ever get the opportunity to ask the coach about specific play calls or specific strategy, because that's my observation, and appreciate your time. Take it easy.
Chris actually says most of it anyway. Not a lot of questions there. But which is probably the way it ought to be right now. Sark did agree with you that that was a terrible play call and probably the beginning of the end, that the most negative thing that happened at the end of the game was not in the final 3 minutes when they gave up two touchdowns and couldn't get a first down and couldn't kick a good punt. He thought the worst thing that happened was he called it himself a bad call, where he gave Cody the option on that 3rd and 2 to either throw the bubble screen or to run it. And Nelson had been hot, and Nelson had been, going well, and Cody chose to go with the bubble screen. I'm not sure. When you're in that situation, they were on the 29-yard line. They had just moved the ball 61 yards in 11 plays. It was like 7 minutes to go. And they had Arizona State was just about ready. It was just about over. And if they'd have pushed another score in, made it 34-18, that game probably would have been over. And here's USC. Instead of they had two plays. Basically, you're in four down territory in the 29. So you got two plays. You got 2 yards to go, and they had been running the ball well. For them to go away from that, that's, I think, symptomatic of what's wrong with the offense. It's going in fits and starts. Sometimes they can run it. Third quarter, they could run it. Fourth quarter, when they have a first down on the 44 after the onside kick, all they need is one first down. They ran the ball 3 times with Buck, and they lost 2 yards. That's terrible. I mean, that's just awful. That's really, really, really bad, and really bad for the offense. That's what, you've got a team that it doesn't look like they really know what they're doing. It doesn't look like you've got a dependable feeling of, here's who we are, here's how we're going to get things done. Look at Arizona State. They're playing without their, really good quarterback, only the second start for Mike Bercovici, and you knew exactly who they were, exactly what they were going to do, exactly how they were going to do it, and they went out and did it. And that's what good teams do with good coaches. And right now, you can't say that USC is in that group. On defense, yeah, when you look at Sark was talking about on his conference call Sunday, he was talking about how when it's really obvious what's going on, like the fact that Boston College can't pass the ball, it's wet, it's damp, they're going to run it. Or when Arizona State obviously can't run the ball, and they're behind, they're going to throw it. When you know absolutely what the other team is going to do and you can't stop it, that's a problem. And Sark is admitting it. That's a problem. And that's, Coach Wilcox's problem. I mean, how do you give up 450 yards rushing to Boston College, you can't throw it, and then you give up 510 yards passing to an Arizona State team that can't run it? I mean, you've got to be able to stop teams that are going to be, then it's so obvious what they're going to do. You've got to be able to stop them. That this team can't, and then does things like, that makes it worse, like Kayvon Seymour, leaving his feet and, coming up like 2 yards short on that play with nobody behind him. I mean, that's just, you can't even imagine that you would do that when all he needed to do in that situation, when you're up 9, all you got to do is just stand there, let the guy catch it and tackle him. Let him throw 7 more till they get down the field. But no, you let him go 73 yards for a touchdown. I mean, that to me was, that's the worst single play of the game to allow that to happen. But again, that's coaching. You can blame the kids, but I think in a lot of ways that's, well-coached teams do not do that.
All right. Well, let's see. We got a whole bunch of other questions to get to, so we'll just kind of jump in here.
Okay.
I'll give you a quick one. It's Tarek. He says, on the offensive line, do you think it would be better to have Andre Walker at right guard or just keep him or keep it as it is?
I think we probably spent more time talking about Andre Walker than he has earned at this point. I think he'd have to really show that he really intends to be a factor at this point. I mean, it's just, no, I think you'd be better off working with the young guys at this point. I think there's much more of an upside with the young guys. So the answer would be no.
Frank in Sacramento, we have a lot of negative questions, obviously. I'm going to give you one of the positive ones, or at least we have a few fans who are writing in similar to Frank. He said, don't everyone panic. What ranked teams didn't lose over this weekend? The passing game was working, except for some key drops. The running game was working with several touchdowns. We shut down their running game. Our pass defense has not given up a touchdown all year. We got beat by the ghost of Doug Flutie. It was his night. That's Frank from Sacramento. So he's still saying, don't give up hope.
Well, I think the problem is they did play well. They did a lot of things well, and they still got beat. I think that's the problem. They're playing at home against a team without its quarterback, and they got beat. And they play hard. And they tried. That's what scares you, I think, a little bit. Is, you know, what's wrong here? If you can, you know, you can come out, try hard, play hard, and still get beat. You know, you've got all these players that, you know, if you consider the recruiting rankings have any relevancy at all, or if you consider, you know, where these guys are going to go in the NFL draft. USC had more talent, clearly more talent on the field. Now, whether they had more talent on the sidelines, you know, that's one of the problems. Todd Graham is a big-time professional college football coach. Next week, Rich Rodriguez is a big-time professional college football coach. Both of them have big-time professional college football staff. They make it hard. They make it really hard. If you do things, don't do things well, if you do things inconsistently, if you do take chances, if you do, you know, things that can get you in trouble, they will get you in trouble. These are guys, and the more you get into the you know, the season, the more they can see things that they can exploit, and these are guys that will exploit them, and it makes it hard when it looks like your coaching staff isn't really sure of what it wants to do, of who it is, of what, how they're going to do something, you know, when they're really under the gun on either offense or defense or special teams. That makes it tough. And these guys, this Pac-12 now, they're going to make it tough on you. If you watched Utah against UCLA last night, if you're watching what Washington State and Cal are doing, this is going to be a tough league, and nobody's going to give you a pass. And you better be ready to play, and you better know what you're doing, who you are, and how you're going to get there. And right now, USC is one of the undefined teams in the league that doesn't look like it knows who it is. It doesn't look like USC doesn't have a physical, intimidating kind of a team on defense anymore. And that really is kind of a problem. They don't get after people. And they need to be able to get after people.
Chris and Cambria had a kind of different take. So we have more, a lot more questions like this, to be fair. Well, I've seen enough to know that Coach Sark is not a very good head coach. It's going to be a long few years. He will not take us there. Forget sanctions. Watch the games again. We have enough talent. But I'm finally realizing tonight we made the wrong hire. That's from – I'm sorry, that was from Patrick. And then Chris and Cambria – I'm sorry, there was two questions kind of similar. Chris and Cambria wrote, it's clear that the coaching of this team is lacking. Unless coaches are evaluated on their ability to turn football players into sideline cheerleaders, if the coaching and performance of the team continues to disappoint, how long realistically could it be before a coaching change could be made? So a couple not positive comments on the coaching staff, Dan, that you can comment on.
You don't like sideline cheerleaders? Come on. Hey, I thought that choreography was it might have been one of the better things of the night, right? No, I shouldn't say that. But, yeah, I mean, this is the problem. Last year they were 3-2, had a horrible loss to Arizona State, and they were able to do something about it and turned everything around. This year they're 3-2 with, just like last year, two really bad losses in the first five games. And what are you going to do about it? That's the question. And for a team that's already gone through this a couple of times, probably, when you think about it, and now they're going through it again, and how do you reach those kids, you know? Because Ed Orgeron, probably not coming back. And now where do you go from there? Where do you go for kids who think maybe – you know, my best move right now is to start getting ready for the NFL. Or, you know, that's the big worry, you would think, at this point. And, you know, how big is, you know, we thought last week's game was the biggest, and then this week's game was the biggest. Now next week's game is the biggest. I mean, you know, they still would have a chance to maybe right themselves if they go down and play really well at Arizona. But, you know, that hasn't been the tradition here the last couple of times in Tucson. So we'll see where this goes. But I'm not thinking you should be thinking we're going to get immediate changes or we're going to get short-range changes. You know, whether the staff holds together the way it is, I guess that's always a possibility, whether that's what you're thinking about. But you wouldn't look for any, you know, drastic changes. Last year was a drastic change, and it actually kind of worked. Not sure that that's in the cards right now.
I agree with you 100%, Dan. It's a lot of people want change right now. It just does not seem like there's any possible way it's going to happen. Just listening to Sark's conference call, listening to the way he answers the questions, when you asked him about even giving up the play calling duties, that seemed like the furthest thing from his mind. So to me, they're five games in. I mean, that's realistically, they are still five games in to a brand new staff, new schemes and everything. You do have to, I'm not saying you do, it's like they're positive developments and everything, but you could definitely argue if you're Pat Hayden or whoever that you have to give things time. And Steve Sarkisian can argue that. Now, do USC fans realize that he was only going to be on a short leash to begin, just because Ed Orgeron was such a popular guy. Now that's kind of coming to fruition, and it makes it, I think Pat Hayden knew if he didn't win right away, it was going to make it tougher. He's now seeing that it's going to be tougher around Heritage Hall, around the John McKay Center, because Steve Sarkisian's losing and they're not looking good.
Yeah, and I think, you know, part of that is Sark basically said at every stop along the way, starting in the spring, that this team was better than he realized, didn't realize he had, you know, and by the time, you know, he got to the late spring, he was telling people that he thought he had more talent than anybody in the Pac-12. Nobody had as much talent. Nobody had a better, you know, top 22. Nobody had a better two deep. And he clearly, you know, felt that way and had no problems with, you know, high expectations. And I think a lot of people basically felt like if you were going to let last year's staff go after turning it around and going 10-4 and finishing up strong the way they did, at least with in the last four games, you beat Stanford and you win going away in the bowl game with Fresno, that you had to come in with, if you're not going to retain those guys, you come in with a staff that's going to keep them on that same trajectory since you've got most of those players back. And, you know, you might have lost a few of the guys who could have come back and would have come back had you know, Coach Orgeron's staff stayed. But I think the understanding was this is not a start over. This is not a time for somebody to come in and say, oh, we got to build from, you know, the ground up. I mean, I know Sark felt like this is one of those ideal situations where you're coming in as the new coach, but you don't have to rebuild anything. You've got a team ready to go. You've got a team with a lot of talent. I mean, you know, is Buck Allen best running back in the Pac-12? Yeah, probably. I mean, is best combo back? Yeah. And, you know, you've got a lot of guys that are going to be pretty high in, you know, the NFL draft list and all that. And the sloppiness and the kind of disconnected play, or the fact that one week you can't stop the run and the next week you can't stop the pass, and all, or you go, you know, four games and you don't give up a touchdown pass, and then you get to game five and you give up five of them. I mean, it's just that kind of inconsistency is really, I don't think you can build a program on that. And you can't build a program if you don't know who you are and what you're supposed to look like and how you're supposed to win games. You can't win it if you're coaching scared and you're trying not to, you know, not to lose. And a lot of issues involved that, you know, we're going to see play out here and real quickly this week.
We certainly will. Let's get back to the question. Sorry, a little sidetrack there. A lot of attention and questions will be given to the USC defense after a loss to Arizona State, and rightfully so after blowing a 9-point lead with 2 minutes left. But multiple drives and even a touchdown were negated by drop passes. This has become a common occurrence with T. Martin coaching receivers. What could be done to, quote-unquote, fix their hands, and how could USC, with its talented receiver corps, not have open routes downfield ever. This is a Trojan in Tennessee, so someone that's very familiar with T. Martin. I guess he's being a little hard on the USC receivers coach.
Yeah, I think that's stupid. But I think one of the things I think that when you've got that many receivers is I think you have to throw the ball a lot in practice. And we have seen practice change a little bit once they've gotten into the season and once they started the scout team, you know, prep stuff and all that. I liked it. I mean, I liked it better when they were running their stuff and run a lot and run it in under pressure. And you don't probably see that as much, and they probably don't catch as many balls as they used to. And I do think that's a problem. And I think that's you know, the genius of coaching and figuring out how do you get that done you know, in a week's time so that they're really ready to you know, go out there and catch everything. And it's becoming more obvious the drops are. You didn't see that early, but you're seeing more of that, and I think it's somewhat a reflection of how they're practicing. I do also wonder about some of the routes. They just look like they aren't creating separation as much as you'd like. I think Arizona State, by throwing the ball down the field, was certainly able to create some separation at times, but when you're kind of constricted and throwing the ball, you know, short routes, and you really don't stretch the field as much as we thought we were going to see. And I mean, I think you need to be able to do that. And so I think some of that scheme and some of that's practice. But I really wouldn't, you know, say that, you know, personalize it with Coach Martin. I don't think at all. I mean, I think, you know, well, there are other issues there.
Okay, let's see. Chad in Riverside. Hey, guys. During the game, Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network, he's been a guest on our podcast, by the way, very good follow, at Move the Sticks on Twitter, he said that good offenses are explosive or physical. Then he said USC was neither. Why is Sark so afraid of taking shots down the field? It is clear that defenses are not having to play honest and are just crowding the box. That's Chad in Riverside.
I think and Daniel Jeremiah and I are on the same wavelength there. That's a really good way to say it. They're not, you know, you're either physical or you're, you know, really, really explosive, and they're neither. I think some of that is you're a little afraid. You know, you got young linemen. Can we pass block, or can our running back pick up that? You know, and we've shown with the number of sacks, probably not always. You know, is that because you got too much offense in and maybe you're asking them to, you know, handle too many different schemes? You know, I don't know. You're not moving the pocket enough, or you're not, you know, coming up with ways that you can, you know, best use Cody's skill set. I know Sark said that this, you know, on Sunday night. He said that they got to come up with a game plan that maximizes their player's skill set. You know, you wish that would have already happened, but they've got to throw the ball down the field. And I know, you know, there was a similarity with when Lane stopped, you know, wanting to do that because of worrying about protection or worrying about what could go wrong and all of that kind of thing. I think you gotta go with what you can do. I mean, that George Farmer hasn't, you know, gone down the field once. That you don't have to, you know, if he's in the game, you would think, you'd like people to think, man, this is the kid that can really run. We better, you know, force them to at least adjust. But really, you don't have to adjust now. Bryce Dixon can get down the field for a tight end. You don't have to adjust. You know, Buck Allen, you just think I'd throw the ball to Buck as many times as I could until they stopped him. And, you know, there are just things I think that need to be done that aren't being done. And one of them is creating a personality. Who is this USC football team? What kind of team is it? And what are they going to, you know, how do they beat you? And so that they know when it's third and two, they all know what USC's kids do. They know exactly what we're going to run and how we're going to beat you. And that's the key thing. And if you're questioning right now, which everybody is, who is USC when they're third and two on the 29-yard line with a chance to put the game away, Who is USC? Are they the bubble screen team? Well, okay, if you want to be that team, and then you see what happens. You know, if you're the team that wants to throw in a Wildcat and have Justin Davis get crushed, you know, with no chance because you didn't block it at all, okay, fine. But that's probably not a team that's going to beat anybody good. So this is a team without a personality right now. It's a team that doesn't seem to know how it's going to beat people and what it has to do to win games. And that's really crucial at this point. And I don't think we've got any answer for that.
We got a couple of questions here. I'm going to give it. Well, I'll give them one at a time. But very different viewpoints, and we've seen some different ones before. But first is Stephen Poway, who is a PhD, by the way, smart man. Here's the thing: I can't stop myself from asking. What if Ed Orgeron had stayed on as defensive coordinator? Would this team be playing with more heart at this point? Would the defense be stronger? Does this defense even have an identity? Since I'm thinking this, I wonder if others are, and most importantly, whether this coaching staff will always suffer from a what-if problem as fans and players doubt them. Put differently, part of the staff's problem is they inherited a pretty good team, especially the defense. Have they actually taken a step or two back this year? Stephen Poway.
Yeah, I think, Steve, I think one of the as far as that question was, I think one of the things, Ed probably tried to be his own defensive coordinator at Ole Miss, but I think he knows, and one of the lessons he learned at Ole Miss is that really wasn't his role. His role was defensive line coach, where he's one of the, you know, probably all-time greats in college football. Last year, the team benefited from having both Ed Orgeron and then Pete Jenkins, who an absolute legend as a defensive line coach in college football, so and the NFL. So that team had, you know, that was a big leg up, I think, for that team, to say the least. But not Ed as a defensive coordinator, but I think Ed is a, you know, just that kind of guy who the kids bonded with, and that tough man, you know, was more than a tough man image. And the fact that I think always what helped Ed was he was a recruiting coordinator. So basically he knew everybody. Everybody went through Ed. He knew their, you know, their families. There was a kind of a bonding that where everybody was kind of on the same page, and it made it so much easier for that to happen. And that hasn't happened. And I know, I think this team, and one of the nice, I think one of the good things these kids did is they did not hold that against the new staff. And I think they really gave them the benefit of the doubt, you know, through the winter, through the spring, through the summer. I never saw a team work so hard in the summer. Through August, but you've seen cracks start developing in the kind of the, you know, the overall approach and the unity and all of that as the team has gotten ready week after week for games, and things seem to have changed, and they don't seem to all be on the, on that same page, and you know, it's and now I think maybe there is that what if. I mean, I think that's one of the really biggest dangers this week for sure is if, you know, players and people start saying this was the week last year when everything changed. It's the week, you know, that Ed and company took over. And this is the week they played Arizona and got their first win and moved on. And so, yeah, I think that's a real danger, you know, for this team this year right now.
All right, and then kind of the other side of the coin, JJB says, great show, I'm very disappointed, but all these comments I've been reading on the various Trojan sites about firing Steve Sarkisian and calling Sark and Wilcox bums is counterproductive. The players are going to read these things. If they lose confidence in the coaching staff, then we're really in a world of hurt. Personally, I would have bent over backwards to bring in Chris Peterson, but they chose to go in another direction. We can't hire a new coach every year. I think Sark should be given at least 3 years, and we should support him. I would extend that to any of his assistants, but even Wilcox should receive our support for the rest of the year. Well, the fact that he said even Wilcox is pretty bad. He has a reputation to uphold. He's being mentioned for head coaching jobs. Let's see if he can fix this defense. That's JJB.
Yeah, I think was being mentioned might be the way to way to say that at this point.
But even Wilcox, I thought that was funny.
Even Wilcox, when you have to say it that way, they didn't have 3 years. That's the problem. This was a team, in the situation where USC is, they got through the NCAA's, you know, horrific sanctions and all of that, and Lane, you know, being the coach, and all that. They got through it better than anybody could have ever dreamed. And that 10-4 season last year was a dream in a lot of ways. And to have most of the talent back and guys working hard and really wanting to be good and saying, this is our chance finally, you know, we're sort of off sanctions. We don't have, you know, the numbers aren't great, but we do have a lot of talent. It's young. All we got to do is coach them up, get them out there, get everybody on the same page, and let's go. And that's the hitch, I think, is that it wasn't a three-year rebuilding situation. It wasn't this was a team that the good news, if you come in here, is you got a ready-made team. The bad news is people expect you, to have a team that's ready to go and to be better than last year's team was. On paper, it certainly is better, you know, than last year's team. To end up at 3-2 right now with last year at this time they'd lost to Washington State, comparable to the loss to Boston College. And then they lose to Arizona State again. I mean, this is the year, for example, USC's got the full recruiting class. And you really find it hard when Arizona State comes in, and they're the cool team after pulling off that, gutty victory at the buzzer. And USC is looking like, you know, they don't know what exactly they're trying to do. I think it's they're in a very, very difficult situation, and they absolutely do not have 3 years.
Yeah, no, I agree. They definitely do not. Let's see. D from the Inland Empire had a question. He said, I've been listening to the podcast for a couple of years now and really enjoy your insights and opinions. Thank you very much, D. It's my opinion that Coach Sarkisian is in a position to hire the best available persons to serve as offensive coordinator and special teams coordinator. Why wouldn't he make an executive decision to hire someone better than he is so that he can focus on being a head coach? And do you think that he trivializes the importance of special teams to the point that he's happy using his piecemeal approach? So a little critical of Sark and the offense and special teams.
I'm not one that's convinced you got to have a separate special teams coach. You just have to coach them up. You got to really know what you're doing, and you got to, devote enough time. I mean, I think, there were some really good things about the way John Baxter did what he did, but it was spotty. There were some things that were kind of goofy. And, you had to, and yet they did some things really well. You know, the kick and punt blocking part of it, some of the return game, punt return, great, kickoff return, not so good. whether you have a full-time guy doing that or whether you have the right shared, assistant coaches where they, each of them have different duties and that kind of thing, I think you can do it a couple of different ways. You have to really make it a priority in practice, and that may be an issue. And I think the offensive coordinator thing, I think, is showing that there are things that head coaches really have to do besides call plays. And USC's had a couple of those situations already this year. And, they have been very tough. And there are times when you really wish the head coach had the ability to concentrate on the defense and concentrate on working with the defensive coordinator in adjusting to what Boston College was doing with the option and the quarterback and what Arizona State was doing with their quarterback and their passing game. And if you're having to think about what series that you're going to start with when you come out of at halftime, do you really have time to focus on what a head coach is focusing on? If you're down to the you know, you're 9 points up with 3 minutes to go. You know, where should your attention be if you're the head coach or you get into that last play of the game? If you're still holding your play sheet, are you able to really do the job that you have to be doing in terms of coordinating, you know, a couple of different possible defensive alignments on that last play? I mean, I think it's really tough, and I wouldn't do it, especially if you've got Clay Helton on your staff, who, you know, Clay did double duty actually in the last game where he's the head coach and the play caller. But when you have somebody on that on your staff like that, you would just think it would be a natural. I mean, Clay really runs the offensive part of practice, you know, in practice. It would just seem like natural to go ahead and have him do it in games. But when I asked Sark that question, it obviously had never crossed his mind not to do it. He just has always done it. This is his 6th year as a head coach, and it's just the way he is. It's who he is. It's how he sees himself. And I'm just not sure if it's working out. It doesn't look like maybe it is.
There we've got a bunch of questions on that Hail Mary play. So I'm going to play you the voicemail one first, and then right when it's done, I'll read you a couple of things that people wrote in too. But let me play this for you.
Okay.
Hey, guys. It's Mike from Lantana, Texas. Just want to thank you for all you do. You guys put on a great show every week. Two things for you. What is the percentages on a Hail Mary? It seems like you see maybe one or two a year in all of college football from all 120 teams. And USC's seen two in the last 2 weeks. And then the Cal game also this year. Also, it seemed like Sarkisian did a good job of managing the game. He had to slow the offense down to help the defense stay rested. I think it's going to take us a while to build up our depth because of the outrageous NCAA infractions and everything that we got labeled with. I'd like to know your thoughts on how long it's going to take us to actually get back to full strength.
And we'll let you, since I was kind of, we'll get to the more specific Hail Mary stuff. I'll let you talk about that question first, then we'll talk about the Hail Mary stuff after.
Okay, I think on the depth thing, Sark really thought he had enough depth this year. He believed that you're going with most teams, you know, you might have 85 on scholarship or 105 or 110 or whatever on the roster, but basically you've got a kind of a 50-some guys in terms of these are the guys you're going to play with, 50 to 60. And he felt like he had that 50 to 60, without a doubt. You know, that was, we're good to go. And he has not wavered from that. And I tend to pretty much agree with him that if you don't get a run at, say, a tight end or something like that of injuries, that I don't know that you're in that great of a depth situation. Okay, maybe you could have had one or two more offensive linemen. You know, with Andre Walker and Jordan Simmons both injured, okay, that's kind of an issue. But were they going to be better than these, you know, pretty talented freshmen? I don't know. You know, would it have been better to have, yeah, the numbers are such that if you'd had, you know, enough of recruiting classes the last 3 years, you know, things would have changed a little bit. But I don't know that depth is going to be the way to go there. So you know, I'm not a big one, and Sark hasn't been either about the depth or the numbers as an issue.
And then he did mention the Hail Mary, but I wanted to get the specific question about it. We had a bunch of people write in. Hail Mary was a real head scratcher. I don't think I ever recall watching a receiver catch the ball on the fly while a group of defenders were standing around right in front of them. Can we assume that the defensive backs have never practiced the end of the half, end of the game tip drill? That's from Franco. We had Jay from Atlanta write in, Brandon Rancho Cucamonga, Robin Ukaipa. He said you should bring in receivers like Keyshawn Johnson, things like that. I know Coach Harvey Hyde talked about it, but we wanted to get your thoughts on the Hail Mary play too.
Well, I mean, I think they got themselves caught because they absolutely didn't know what to do, because the thought was, what if they throw a 15-yard out and get it out of bounds with 2 seconds to go and come in and kick a field goal? So they're trying to do two things. They're trying to defend against the out and also the thought about the Hail Mary. And they obviously made two calls. How that works exactly, I don't know, because we're talking to, you know, seniors and guys that have played a lot of football. And they made it clear after the game that everybody didn't know what the calls were and everybody wasn't on the same page. And, you know, what Hayes Pollard is doing as the deep middle guy, I'm still not sure. His role evidently eventually in the final call against the Hail Mary was to be a box-out guy. And unfortunately, he boxed out Leon McQuay, who was supposed to be the jumper, the guy that was going to go for the football. Now, when they practice it, in order to avoid injuries, they only let the offense or the defense jump. And we got the sense that maybe the offense gets a little more of that, because when you're practicing Hail Marys, maybe you're spending a little more time. We don't get to see it because that's what they do on Thursday. So we're not in there when they're doing it. But from what we've been told, that they allow only the offense or the defense to jump, but never both of them. So in terms of actually practicing that live, no, they don't. So they don't have a situation where somebody goes up and you know, tries to catch it, and somebody goes up and tries to knock it down. Probably hurt them a little bit. I mean, it looked like you know, a 1950s a photo of a basketball game where all 10 players are standing on the ground. Nobody's in the air. And in that play, I don't even know if Jalen Strong got up in the air much, but the rest of them, I mean, it's hard to imagine and remember a Hail Mary when nobody's up in the air. They're all standing there.
Yeah.
Very weird. Very, very. Now, last week, Oregon State kind of got caught in that same situation. The USC at least put up a wall and kind of walled them off, and but Darius did go up and get it. But it was very weird that they allowed that to happen, and that they, you know, they couldn't get it clear in everybody's mind. I mean, the kid, you know, Sark said he thinks it's pretty clear what was going on, but we don't get the sense that the players think it was that, you know, crystal clear. And it certainly didn't look like, I mean, I think it's terrible. One of the bad things is Hayes Pollard should not be put into that situation where people are pointing him out and saying, why didn't he do this and why didn't he do that? That's not his job. He's a middle linebacker, for goodness sakes, you know. And for him to be in the middle of that scrum when he's basically never defended a pass like that in his life, just seems crazy. And he, you know, that wasn't his place. Now, could you have put in some of those receivers if you didn't know for sure that they're going to throw deep? Because if you watch the UCLA ending, UCLA came up with the other answer. They threw the ball to the sideline and went for the field goal at the end of the game against Utah. It didn't help them. They got a couple of chances and they couldn't kick the field goal in. But they chose not to throw the Hail Mary, but to throw the sideline out. So, you know, it was a little bit of a difficult situation, but, you know, they got caught, and Arizona State, you know, made the play. One would have liked to have seen him go after the quarterback maybe, but they didn't choose to do that. And that probably won them the Stanford game, because J.R. Tavai came hard. And Hogan didn't see him coming. And, you know, that might be my choice. Just go try to win it instead of trying to keep from, you know, getting beat.
And then we had one last one. Matt in Ann Arbor wrote in. It was about he called in about a three-minute question. And cool. Sorry, Matt, we can't play like 3 minutes on the podcast here. But he
we could score two touchdowns in 3 minutes, actually. Yeah,
so. Or three, yeah.
With no timeouts.
His big issue was the conservative play calling, and something that, you know, we talked about a little bit, playing not to lose. And is that something that you've seen a lot lately? Or was it happened at the beginning of the season, or is it adopted later? What do you think about the whole playing not to lose versus playing to win thing?
Yeah, I think it seems to have come up more when the more they've spent getting ready for each opponent, and the more we can do this, we can't do that, whatever. And it seems more in the more focus on the team you're playing, and maybe how you have to do this instead of the focus on yourself and what you can do, and how you're going to be out there and just make them stop you rather than you worrying about how they're going to stop you. I mean, I think it's just a kind of a psychology of how you have to do things. And I think there has to be a little bit of a fearlessness about, this is who we are. This is how we're going to get it done. And we'll see if you can stop us. And a sort of a confidence in your personality. And we are this team who can do these things. We're very proud of that. You don't want to be the gutty little Trojans heading to Tucson that hope you can show that you can stay on the same field with the nationally ranked Wildcats who have four guys that you would have recruited, But that's the storyline that we're hearing for this week is, and hopefully the this kind of a game will stimulate the USC players' pride, and they all practice hard and show up and play well. And it just doesn't play right to me that you're talking about that, about this USC team. That's just, that's not the way this team ought to be going.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that, Dan, but it went from a top 10 team to now a team that's got a lot of issues. And it'll be a big question. This weekend at Tucson's not going to be easy. Will they be able to handle it? Will they be able to bounce back this week at practice and get their head straight? Because this is a team now, I think there's a sense of fragileness, I guess you could say, with the psychological game here isn't being played very well, I guess you could say. They're not in a good spot, it seems like, and there's a lot of potential issues coming up.
Yeah, I mean, just take a look at what Rich Rod did with Arizona. They go into, this is a team that, needed an unbelievable Hail Mary of their own to beat Cal. And then they go into, Eugene and just really play like, we're going to win this game. We're going to take it away. We're not going to let you do this. We're not going to let you do that. We're going to run it at you. We're going to take it away from you. And played fearlessly and just shut them up in Alton and did everything you'd ever hope for a team that, that they can do. And you're thinking, why is that not something that USC does this week? I mean, what is keeping USC from being a team that knows what it can do, knows how it can play, and goes, I mean, that you're actually in some ways really almost, in awe of this Arizona team is pretty amazing when you think about it. And give them credit. They did great. And, you watch them Thursday night and you think, gosh, that's great. Rich Rod has done a terrific job with this team. But what that says is, why not USC?
Yeah.
Why not, have that same feeling about USC and the ability to go in there and do that? And if the two Arizona schools can be ranked, and USC can't, and both of them get knocked off USC and UCLA on the same night at home, you do wonder what the heck's going on.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will see, and it's going to be a tough one this weekend, like I said, in Arizona. We'll be watching them this week, so check out uscfootball.com for all that. So this might be our longest podcast ever, Dan, but thanks for bearing with us and getting to all the questions. And, again, I apologize. We're still getting questions in late that I haven't got to be able to get to them. We just had so many to start with that if you didn't get them in early enough, we unfortunately didn't get to you. But, you can send them in again next week. We'll see what happens, USC and Arizona. But thanks again, Dan. We appreciate it.
I enjoyed it. A long podcast and the longest final 3 minutes ever. So, it maybe is fitting. And this may be a really long week.
It very well could be. All right. Well, we'll see, Dan. We'll check in on practice. Check out uscfootball.com for all the latest reports. For Dan Weber, Coach Harvey Hyde, this is Ryan Abraham. Thanks for tuning into the Peristyle Podcast. We will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by uscfootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.